You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome into the show. Welcome into the final hour. If you have been with us for the last 2 hours, we appreciate you hanging in there with us and having a good time talking some sports and chopping it up. If you're just joining, well, welcome in. Hope you're having a great Wednesday, and hope that you enjoy the, you know, things that you hear us discuss as we move through this show. So, yeah, with that being said, this is hour three, and we got some really cool stuff that we want to talk about, and that's going on. But first and foremost, you know, if you're going somewhere, you want to drive there, get there in style, want to have some hookup type deal, look, some swag dripping off of you, get a Mercedes-Benz van. You know why? Because where other Benz or other vans stop short, Mercedes-Benz vans go far beyond. From their customization options and cutting-edge tech to their five-star sales, service, and financial support crew, Mercedes-Benz vans are built, equipped, and engineered to be ready for anything. So go the extra mile by taking that all-important first step into an authorized dealership today. I approve this message. I love them Sprinter vans. Boy, I tell you, they're pretty cool to use. Anyway, yeah, guys, so hour three, and, going into the break, we asked the question, is the window of opportunity for, let's just say the NFC, let's not go to the Super Bowl yet, for the NFC, does the self-ordained America's team, is their window open or is it closing in terms of the opportunity to be the team that comes out of the NFC?
Oh, for me, it's open. Now, it's not as wide open as it once was when that offensive line was plowing guys off the ball. They were pretty much running the ball at will. Dak was on his rookie contract. It's not that type of window. We're not talking about that, but they have a slight window. This is the year, because after this year, they're gonna have to make a decision on Zeke and Amari Cooper. And if you look at it contractually, Amari Cooper's probably gonna be the odd guy out, and so they're gonna have to really do some damage this year. And when you look at the division, it's actually benefiting to the Cowboys that the Eagles, new head coach, in essence, quarterback that's going to start, and Jalen Hurts, that hasn't really started a season out as a starter in the National Football League. The Washington Football Team, new quarterback.
Right.
Great defense, but new quarterback. And then you have the Giants with Daniel Jones. They got him Kenny Galladay. They got him some new weapons. Gettleman is on a hot seat. What are they going to be? So, for me, the window is open because of the division the Cowboys are in. Can they stay healthy? And if they can, then they have a chance.
Hey, I love this time of the year when the NFL season is right around the corner, because every year about this time, it's always the Dallas Cowboys in. This year's the year.
Every year.
It's crazy. It's been this year for the last 25 seasons, and nothing has changed. So I just sit in amazement. You know, every time I'm over, every time I see Skip Bayless, we joke back and forth, and he always tells me that the Super Bowl in 2007 was luck, and Dallas had a better football team than us, and I just laugh and laugh and laugh. But you know what? The Dallas Cowboys, they just can't stop anybody. And that's been their Achilles heel for the last 4 or 5 years. They just stink at defense. They're terrible. They can't stop anybody. They can't stop the big play. Guys catch, I think their defensive secondary got caught the most 20-yard passes in league history last season. They're ranked 28th on defenses, which is only four from the bottom. And then they're talking about the NFL draft, and you look at the guys that they're trying to bring in. They're all defense. because they know that they can't stop anybody. They really don't have an explosive offense to the point to where they can put up 20, 28, 35 points a game. They don't have that style of offense. So they have to be able to stop somebody if they want to compete, even in the NFC least. That's what I call it. Mm. They have to be able to stop people. And, you know, Patrick Peterson wanted to go to Dallas. I don't know what happened with that whole deal. I don't know why they let Patrick Peterson get out of the door from Arizona and make his way to Minnesota. I have no idea. But obviously they know that they have to be able to stop people because they just signed Malcolm Butler and A.J. Bowie, two matching corners who are better than the guys that they currently have who can match up with guys on the outside one-on-one. But every year about this time, man, it's always the same thing. This is the year for the Dallas Cowboys. It just hasn't been the year for the last 25 years. Let's just address the elephant in the room. And, you know, with looking at the NFC least, this might be the year again going into the 26 years now that they might be able to, you know, win the NFC East. And, you know, win a playoff game and, you know, make a run in the playoffs. But, you know, I just can't hang my hat on the Dallas Cowboys based off of what I've been looking at. Hopefully, with Dak Prescott coming back, the offense will be more efficient in the passing game and they can get Ezekiel Elliott back going in the running game. You know, I think the sky's the limit for CeeDee Lamb. I think he's a phenomenal talent to be teamed up with Amari Cooper. But I just have to see something differently from them offensively and defensively. They have to be able to stop people. And if they can't stop people, that I don't think they really have that explosive offense that can go out and put up 35 points a game.
I'm with you, Plex. I'm with you on this one. Listen, you stayed in the NFC East. I think the window is open, TJ, for them to possibly contend for the NFC East this year. They have an array of talent and weapons on offense. They actually have talent, an array of talent on defense as well. They've just underachieved. So to me, I think that they could have an opportunity. We saw the Giants take a step forward in the type of team that they, you know, ultimately became. During last season, we saw the Washington football team take a tremendous step forward. I would say today the Washington football team is probably the front runners for the NFC East if I were just taking a stab at it today. But once you come up out of that NFC East and you go all the way into the National Football League, fellas, I just don't see it. And I'm with you, Plex, on the idea of – the Cowboys have not shown me anything that would make me believe that they could be trusted in a big game. We have yet to see them
y'all
show
talking
up.
Big game. You're just talking division.
Well
division.
Here's the thing.
Who has the best quarterback in the division?
Well, again, in the division,
they got a chance.
I give them props that they can possibly pull it out in the division. But once you get into the idea of what that looks like in the playoffs or even outside of the division, I just don't see them being a team that has shown me that they would be able to get past the top tier teams. I don't consider the Dallas Cowboys a top tier team in the NFL and in the NFC. Like when I look at the NFC, I look at Tampa Bay. I feel like the Rams are right there. Green Bay, they're always right there. I believe the Cardinals are going to be a much improved team this year. The Saints could possibly be a better team than what they were this season. I just think that there are too many teams out there in the NFC that are way too good for me to sit there and think that the window of opportunity is open for Dallas. And looking at Ezekiel Elliott, who was the catalyst for this team, he has not been the same ever since he's received that new deal. I don't know what the reasoning is, if it's the offensive line.
1,000%, the O-line is not the same.
Okay. Well, so then it leads me to believe that they have to, you know, McCarthy and this this team is going to have to embrace an an idea of learning how to win in a different way. You're not going to overpower defenses with your offensive line at this point. I think that that's safe to say. So you're going to have to be able to win the game by either A, being able to throw the ball way more efficiently and effectively to win games, not just for stats. B, you're going to have to figure out how to get the running game going where it culminates what your passing game is going to be and how is that going to take place. I don't trust that they'll be able to establish the run with Ezekiel Elliott, and I don't know that, Dak Prescott can be any better than what he has been as a quarterback. And if he is at that level where he's playing, it stat-wise, wins-wise, we always lean on that to make the argument that Dak is a next-level franchise quarterback in the National Football League. I respect his stat line. I respect what he's accomplished wins and losses-wise. I just don't see him showing me that he can win the big game as of yet.
He has to show you some more, huh?
I need to see more. And I don't know what I'm going to see after the injury. So to me, I look at this Dallas team, I think they're more of a question mark, and it's safer to say that the window, which you would have to assume that they were competitive in the first place, to say that the window is closing on them to have the opportunity. But I think once that offensive line kind of went downhill and started getting the injuries and now they're aging, I just don't look at this Dallas team changing its personality enough to be able to contend with the superpowers, the Titans, so to speak, within the NFC, guys.
Well, that's what Mike McCarthy – well, I mean, he did have Aaron Rodgers, but that was his DNA in Green Bay. He got pounded because he wouldn't run the ball. And so, in essence, that's what he wants to do is pass the ball. And I've always been of the opinion when you pay a quarterback – top quarterback money like the Cowboys have given Dak, you got to put the ball in his hands.
It doesn't mean the ball, you throw it 50 times a game, though.
You got to throw a 40. and you got to throw a 40, and we get this lead. When we get the lead, that's where we run the ball. And so
Mike McCarthy also had a dope defense in Green Bay.
Oh, they were solid.
Mike McCarthy.
No, they weren't dope. They were solid.
And Mike,
what?
And Mike, they were, and Mike McCarthy didn't mind throwing the ball 50 times a game because he had a guy.
You got Aaron Rodgers, right? That's why you go 40.
Why run it if you can throw it 55?
Yeah.
There's at least 2 to 3 Hall of Famers that was on that defense that Mike McCarthy had.
Right.
One's already in. Charles mm-hmm. Woodson.
Charles Woodson.
Peppers is going to go in.
Come on, man. You're talking about guys that had a cup of coffee there.
Clay? No.
Those guys were Hall of Famers before they got to.
Yeah. Yes, but they were also Hall of Famers in the way that they played while
they weren't there long enough. Like Green Bay, they've never run the ball well, and they've never had a great defense until the last few years.
They have good. You can't say never. They have ran the ball. Particularly well in certain years.
Yeah, I think you're undervaluing that defense that they had the year they won the Super Bowl with Mike McCarthy.
And that's why they won it. And what about the years where they can't win a playoff game? The defense
we're saying if we're basing it off of what Mike McCarthy had when he had his success in Green Bay, that's what I'm basing it off of. I think that when Mike McCarthy has the ability to take chances because he's got a world-beating quarterback and B, a defense that can help him out when they get into situations or can give them the ability to play from in front, I think that that's a great combination. That's a great formula for mm-hmm. any coach to have. Mm. But I don't know that they have the ability to do that in Dallas.
I think Mike McCarthy had a great defense in 07, but they just ran into a buzzsaw. NFC Championship.
There you go.
I thought they had a great
when he
defense.
Said 07, I was laughing inside. I couldn't hold it. I couldn't hold it.
But LaVar, when I came to the NFC East in 2005, and LaVar, you played in the NFC East, and we've competed against each other several times.
Yep.
I honestly thought that
the NFC East 15 years ago was arguably the best division in football.
Arguably.
It was competitive every week. And, you know, we didn't like each other.
Not anymore.
Nobody in the NFC East didn't like each other. We didn't like each other at all.
Yep, you're right.
It's just a shame to see
what
the
become.
NFC East where it is now. And if you win seven games, you win the division and get into the playoffs. It's just unfortunate. But with all that being said.
And they wasn't the team that did it. Think about that.
Right. Exactly. They wasn't
and they
the team,
weren't
that,
the team
did
that did it. So I find that hard. I find it hard to go from being that team when what's the DNA change? You change the defensive coordinator. What's the real DNA change from this team that underachieved this past season? And we'll talk about this in the, coming up after this break. You're listening to the Dan Patrick Show with the Up On Game crew, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burris. But to me, well, you know, you're not going to have what it looks like a great off season again in terms of being able to prepare. What is the DNA change of Dallas for them to become this team that has a window of opportunity open to getting out of the NFC and representing the NFC as the champion of the division? I don't see it.
They have, in my opinion, as good a chance as anybody in that division. They have the best quarterback. Again, the offensive line just stay if they can stay healthy.
But you're
Washington
saying
football
in the
team
East,
will give
you're
them
saying
problems.
In the NFC
yes,
East.
Yes,
in I'm NFC saying East. In the entire NFC.
But if you win your division, you're in the playoffs, and so you worry about that first. You win your division, you're guaranteed a spot in the playoffs.
Can they contend with the other teams? Say your theory holds true that they can make it out of the East. Can they contend with the other teams?
From the last time I seen them play in where we stand today, no. But as we know, things change come September. Confidence breeds – success brings confidence. And so if they get out to a good start, they're going to feel really good about themselves. And right now, absolutely not. No way, no how. And my man Rob Parker's voice. But come September, you never know.
Rob Parker.
Oh geez. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Dan Patrick Show. He's off, the Danettes, they're off, but we're on, and we're putting you up on game. And we're going to talk about, vaccinations. How do you feel about the vaccinations and there being a mandatory approach by the NFL? And if you opt out of the vaccination, well, you won't be put into the tiers that they have they've created protocol wise. I want to touch on this. Is this the right move? Is this the wrong move? Are you pro vaccination? Are you pro choice to the vaccination? You're listening to Dan Patrick Show. We're going to talk about that and much, much more on the other side of this break.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Something about the music that makes you want to dance. Welcome back into the dance. You're listening to the Dan Patrick Show. I'm LeVar Arrington. That might have been a Corey in the intro, but so what? I enjoyed it. I felt entertained. I hope you did. Anyways, TJ Hushmanzada, Plexico Burris, we're here. We're talking to you, you know, filling in for Dan and the Danettes on the Dan Patrick Show. If you missed anything and you want to hear it, make sure you go where your iPod, iTunes, whatever your podcast that you're using to download them, go there. Download Up On Game, and you'll be able to hear it. Download the Dan Patrick Show. You'll be able to hear it. So make sure you check us out, man. Subscribe today. You know, tell a friend. All right? Give us a nice little rating if you want. You know, that'd be nice. And anyways, let's transition into this next topic of conversation. It's interesting. This comes out from Tom Pelizzerio.
I hope I got that right, Tom. If I butchered it, I apologize. Pellicero, maybe that might be it. The NFL informed clubs today, any team employee who refuses a COVID-19 vaccination without bona fide medical or religious ground will be barred from Tier 1 or Tier 2 status and thus have restricted access within the team facility and not work directly with players per sources. That's a pretty strong stance. So if you opt out of it and you're a player, that basically says you can't come in there. You can't work out. You can't meet. You can't be around your teammates. I'll just go start off full disclosure. I have not taken the vaccination yet. I've had access to taking the vaccine. I have a little trepidation about it. I'm always a tinfoil hat type of guy. I want to sit back and see if people turn into zombies and I start seeing a real life episode of The Walking Dead. I mean, that's just how I think sometimes. And lo and behold, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has been pulled back due to what they say is a rare blood clotting or blood disorder situation that has become a thing. And based off of their vaccination, I could have been that guy. You know what I mean? And I don't want to be that guy. So I've been sitting back waiting on that. Now, what are y'all's takes on this, you know, being a mandatory situation? Basically said, you don't do it, then you're going to be restricted until you do. Has the NFL given the teams enough time to be able to navigate through, you know, again, they use religious beliefs or a straight up bona fide reason as to why you would have to opt out, which I don't know what that means, guys. If you opt out without a bona fide medical or religious ground, are you still able to come in and be around? Is that the exception, religious grounds or bona fide medical? What say you guys?
I mean, for me, it's tough for all the purpose, they're trying to make this a mandatory thing. It should be similar for what I'm thinking, the flu shot during the flu season in the fall. They would say, we have flu shots available, guys. If you would like to take a flu shot, go let the trainer know. That's what it should be like. You to pretty much make it mandatory, I don't agree with that. And I'll say, I haven't taken a shot. I don't have a vaccination, but my wife does.
My wife did it too.
My wife has taken a shot. My two kids in college, they both have the shot, but I don't. And so I'm not against it. I just makes me a little nervous. Let me say that. And there were times during the season where I didn't take the flu shot. Sometimes I would get it. Sometimes I wouldn't. My last handful of years, I didn't get the flu shot. And so it's a slippery slope, man. When you start trying to mandate guys do something that they might not feel comfortable doing. And we all know when they try to force you to do something is when the majority of guys going to be, I'm not doing this.
But TJ, the flu isn't going to shut down a season. The COVID-19 shut down an entire country and parts of the world. I mean, do you see it being a little bit different than the flu virus?
Oh, 100%. I see it being different. But they've also shown you that, or what has been shown is the medical field has worked tirelessly to try to get this somewhat under control, which we seem to be moving in that direction. And so if we can stay on that trajectory as a country, then we probably will be in good shape. We will probably be in good shape. And there's so much time between now and the season. Will we stay trending in the right direction, or will we go backwards? We don't know. But there's also a ton of people, as we know, that feel very comfortable taking the vaccination. They have no problem getting vaccinated, and their family members. And so there's a side that feel very comfortable with it, and there's a side that do not, and there's also a group of people that are in the middle that are on the fence.
Are we surprised by the NFL making the vaccine mandatory?
It's too much money at stake.
I'm not, because we know what fuels the business. It's a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar organization and company. So I kind of seen this coming a long time ago. First of all, I have no idea what Tier 1 and Tier 2 means. So I don't know who they're speaking about, who they're talking about. Is it levels in the facility? Is second? I don't know what that means. The janitor, I don't know what Tier 1 and Tier 2 means. And secondly, I kind of figured that the NFL would be forced to be put in a position where the employees who are in the facility interacting and being around the players would have to be vaccinated if they want to maintain their employment, so to speak. I can see that happening. But to put a player in a position to say you have to be vaccinated to play football, that's an awkward, you know, position to be put in. And, you know, I don't know where I would stand. I still don't have the vaccine. But, you know, when I was playing, I'm always cognizant about what I put into my body. You know, you don't know what kind of reaction you're going to have, especially from a vaccine that supposedly is supposed to be with you for a lifetime. I don't know what that's going to do to me. I don't know what the side effects are. So, you know, with uncertainty comes distrust. I don't know what's going to happen, you know, with this vaccine as far as, you know, when I put it into my body, will I be able to perform at the same level? All those things kind of play on you mentally. So, and things like that mentally can have a difference of how you think and how you go out and perform. So I don't know if I would take it. If you're put in a position to take the position to maintain employment, I mean, what would you do? Like, really, if you're a player, you're making what, you know, 13, 14, whatever the case may be, $1 million a year, would you take the vaccine just to maintain employment? If you're pro vaccine and you don't believe in it, you take it.
Yes, I'm taking it.
You take it.
Stick me.
They're forcing you to do it, which is a bad position to be in if you don't believe in it. So, you know, I think the NFL, I kind of seen this coming, because you know what? We need to put people in the stands this season. Hmm. Whatever it takes, if we have to force the employees and the players to take this vaccine to fill this stadium come September, then this is what we have to do. Am I surprised? Absolutely not.
There's also the idea of thinking about it from the standpoint of relaxing the rules around the facilities. You know, the cafeteria use, the meeting rooms, you know, all of these things have to be monitored based upon trying to one, operate within the given protocols and rules connected to the amount of people that are able to gather in one area. The idea of having to wear masks at all times, you know, how do you have a team meeting? You know, where are you having the team meeting? How are they spaced out? Does that break a rule? You know, how many guys are able to be in the gym? It's strange, because when you go on the practice field, you know, you're allowed. But so as a head coach of the high school team, you know, that I coach, we weren't able to use our weight room because of capacity situations. We weren't able to use our locker room because of capacity protocols and rules. We were not able to use our film room because of capacity. So if we were going to do that, we would have had to have gone in there with 10 people in total, and that includes coaches. So if it's only one coach, then it's 9 players and one coach. If it, you know, if you wanted to try to, I don't know, try to make it 2 coaches or 3 coaches that need to be able to talk, then you're almost basically breaking it down by position groups because of the rules. So when I look at the complexities of what the rules dictate and the protocols dictate as it applies to the active movement of COVID-19 and living through the pandemic itself, it makes sense from the standpoint of sometimes you have to take measures that are going to protect people, whether they like it or not. But then it comes down to the idea of being pro-choice and what that represents. But if you're going to come into the workplace and that pro-choice is going to dictate a possibility of what's going to happen next, if you're the one that is spreading COVID-19 and it shuts down the building. I mean, we watched it take place with Tennessee. We watched it take place with the Steelers. We watched it take place with college teams. I mean, games were getting canceled. You know, teams had flown in. Clemson had flown into Tallahassee, and the game gets canceled. I mean, I just think that if we're talking sensibly in the approach of how it applies to what's going on in the current state of our country health-wise, I don't see it being such a bad situation to take the responsible approach and just getting vaccinated.
DeLeval,
go ahead.
What is Tier 1 and Tier 2?
I don't know.
I think it's more of a
level.
I don't know. In California, Tier 1, Tier 2 is where you're at as far as cases and certain counties loosening restrictions.
Yeah, and that might be what it is. That might be what they're applying within the building, the tier of clearance and contact and stuff like that. But I would be lying if I said I was 100% clear on the tier, if that's what they're using it for.
Okay.
I just hope that we're able to play football or they are able to play football and we're able to support them and watch them. And more importantly, that the people, the fans can get back into stadiums, because I couldn't imagine and we didn't have to deal with – I couldn't imagine going into Sunday
and no fans
and nobody's there, because you know how it was in training camp, and you get to about the third or fourth day and you're like, man, I'm getting tired of this. It's just the third or fourth day. And then you had that first practice where they invite the fans. You feel real good. All of a sudden,
yeah, give you different energy.
All of a sudden, you just wake up with a different vibe, just because 1,500 to 2,000 people are coming to watch you practice. So just imagine, you get 50, 60, 70,000 in a stadium. And so from that perspective, we've dealt with a lot as a country. We seem to be moving in the right direction. And if this vaccination is part of the process that continues to move us forward, then so be it. It's been a long and hard 12 months for sure.
Well, I think that we will see a difference. And if the vaccine, and I won't say if, I don't think that there's some crazy type of conspiracy to poison all of the NFL employees and all this stuff with a vaccination. So, I tend to think that it's actually a good idea to limit it and to make sure that, guys are able to kind of move towards back being, in a normal type of situation. But we'll see how that all plays out. There's always going to be those who feel as though that their rights are being kind of violated and not wanting to have to comply to certain things such as this. But we're going to shift gears, coming down the home stretch. Zion Williamson, is he the next best thing? Is he the face of the league? Is he going to be the heir apparent? We're going to discuss that here on the Dan Patrick Show. It's the Up On Game crew filling in, and we'll be right back. This is Fox Sports Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back in to the Dan Patrick Show. They've taken the day off, but you know what? We're filling in for Dan and the Danettes. And, well, we come to the last segment of the show.
Hopefully we didn't let you down, people. Hopefully we didn't let you guys down.
Yeah, and if we did, then you know what? Try again. Try again, I guess. But we put our best foot forward. At least we tried to. So, guys, before we lead the show today, I wanted to throw this one out at you guys. Now, errors have been dominated and leveraged to build the NBA popularity. In the 80s, we can recall the league really leaned on the Magic Johnson-Larry Bird rivalry to get things started. So it was Bird and Magic in the 80s. And then in the 90s, this guy by the name of Michael Jordan came along and dominated the 90s. And he was the polarizing figure, the star. Then in the 2000s, of course, it was Kobe and Shaq. And, you know, we could throw a couple other names out there that we think. But Kobe and Shaq, I think, really, really did a great job of carrying the league in the 2000s. And then we get to the 10s. And, of course, it's been LeBron James ever since. As LeBron James' time, and I know this might sound, you know, kind of alarming to some, and I get it, but as his time begins to wind down, it seems to be the conversation is starting to take shape, take hold, that Zion Williamson could be the heir apparent of becoming the face, the new face, the one that they lean on, to be that guy for the NBA. Do you guys see that, or do you think something different?
If he can stay healthy, of course, he has a personality that people seem to gravitate towards, but it helps when you're putting up 25 to 30 a night and you're probably taking 15 to 20 shots doing it, highly efficient. Takes the majority of shots in the paint, but you really can't stop him from getting to the paint. The key is going to be for him is just staying healthy, not putting on too much weight. It would actually be smart of him as he gets a little older to try to lose weight as he ages, as opposed to gaining weight, which a lot of us do naturally. But the Pelicans, more important than anything, they're going to have to win games. They have to win games. They have to make the playoffs. They need to win playoff series. You're not going to be the face of anything if you're not playing in late May and especially in June. And so to get that point, to get to that point, he's going to have to really put that team on his back. And he has help with Ingram, and they have a pretty good team. But, yeah, he's going to have to win some playoff series before we even start talking about that.
No. No, let's just tell the truth, man. No, he is not the heir apparent to LeBron James. The eye test tells us that. We can look at it and see that he is not even on the same planet of LeBron James coming into the NBA, doing what he has done over his career, and this generation will tell you that LeBron James is the best player in the of maybe arguably of all time. And we're talking about Zion Williamson being the heir apparent of LeBron James. Apparently, he is just as good as Brandon Ingram because Brandon Ingram came out and said it. I've never played on a team. I've never played on a team with a guy that's good as me.
So he's basically saying, I'm better than Zion Williamson. So now we're talking heir apparent. Man, I believe the NBA game is in transition. I really do. Out of the young NBA players were under 26, 25, Luka Doncic and Nikola Jokic, they're the best two NBA players under 25. That's what I believe.
Giannis.
And Jason Tatum is no slouch either. So when you talk about being a bona fide superstar, global icon, taking the game international and being an ambassador for the NBA, I just don't see that in Zion Williamson. I just don't. I've watched him play several times, and you can't just give this man the ball and say, go win us a basketball game. That is what. When people say is he the heir apparent to LeBron James, those are some of the things that I think about. And the legacy that LeBron James is leaving behind, I just don't see nobody in this current class that would even scratch the surface of what this young man has done worldwide for the NBA. And what he has, you know, brought to this league, and the kids love him. I mean, they adore him all over the world, and I just don't see Zion Williamson reaching that plateau.
As tough as it may seem, because I am an appreciator and a fan of players, I agree. I don't think the heir apparent is even in the league right now. I don't think he's there. And I always look at it from you mentioned earlier, if you have to have the conversation in terms of with the Hall of Fame, if his name isn't coming up with the greatest of greats when you're having that conversation, then you have to figure out why you're having that conversation. I think Zion is a dope basketball player. I think he's got a lot of potential. I think he's got a tremendously bright future. But when I hear the conversation of can he be as elite as top 10 of all time players and different things like that, I think the verdict is still out on that. But one thing I know for certain is when Michael Jordan became Michael Jordan, you didn't have to question, is this guy the guy? Like, is this guy special? With Shaquille O'Neal, with Kobe Bryant. I just think that with LeBron, I just think that there are a lot of elements that off court that matter more just as much as playing on the court. But, yeah, you know, it's cool. We'll be able to watch it and see how it all plays out. Listen, we hope that you enjoyed the show. If you missed it, make sure you go check out the podcast wherever you download your podcast at. This is the Dan Patrick Show. We are the Up On Game crew, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, Plexico Burris. You can catch us on Saturdays. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio. We appreciate you listening in.